cities and countries can help protect residents, for example, by educating people on how to stay hydrated, increasing access to air conditioning, and developing early warning systems for heat waves.
This threat is here and now. It's not really a future problem. It will continue to get worse, but there are tons of actions that we can take to reduce the impacts.
Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-801-1378. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Josh Salem and James Kemp. The producer is Hannah Francis, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Mel Gertov, David Rosenberg, Brian Bull, Catherine Carley, and Dr. Anthony Lizowitz. The interim evening news director is Hannah Francis. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Eric Leuschner. All our KBOO programs are made possible by support from our members. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to the number 44321. Stay tuned now for an interview about the new book, Teaching Palestine.
Hello and welcome to KBOO Community Radio. Today we are talking with Susanna Kasouf and Bill Bigelow about educating for Palestine. So first of all, I'd like to ask each of you, Susanna and Bill, to introduce yourself and to tell us a little bit about what you do.
I'll go first. My name is Susanna Kasouf. I teach social studies at Grant High School. I'm also a co-editor with Bill on a recent Rethinking Schools book called Teaching Palestine. And I regularly contribute to the Zen Education Project and Rethinking Schools.
And I'm Bill Bigelow, and I taught high school social studies in Portland for many years and am now the curriculum editor with Rethinking Schools magazine, which is a quarterly focused on critical issues in education from a social justice standpoint. And I also co-direct the Zen Education Project on behalf of Rethinking Schools. And as Susie mentioned, I am a co-editor of Teaching Palestine.
So my first question for you both, and feel free to answer in whatever order you'd like to, or if one person just wants to answer, whatever you're comfortable with. Why is it important to include Palestine in public school curricula today?
I think that our students learn as much from what we don't say as what we do. And so if we let them just watch a genocide unfold on their phones while we are completely silent in the classroom, I just wonder what that is teaching them. And that's for, this moment right now. But before October 7th, it was important to teach about Palestine. You know, one of our co-editors on the book, Samia Shoman, who's Palestinian American, she talks about how in her entire schooling experience, she never once learned about Palestine. And it gave her this feeling, and I had this feeling as well as an Arab American, where I wanted to sort of hide who I was. And I didn't feel like school was a place where I could truly be myself. I felt like I had to kind of adopt some sort of white persona. And I think that our students our Palestinian students, our Arab students are experiencing that every day in our school. Not only do they experience the silence in the curriculum, but oftentimes they're experiencing, you know, pro-Israel curriculum in school without kind of any mention of their humanity and their history. And so it's so important that we step in and make that change.
Yeah, just echoing what Susie said, you know, silence is part of the curriculum. And when the curriculum is silent about Palestinians and Palestinian lives, that really, you know, that conditions kids to accept what's going on now. It conditions them to think that, you know, Palestinians' lives don't matter. And so so when this U.S.-supported genocide is unfolding, it's like, well, it's just not a big deal. You know, their lives don't count.
And I also think that it kind of misses the whole point of teaching history. Like, we aren't teaching history just so students can learn about the past. We teach history so that we can learn, so that we can create a better world, so we can change things, so we cannot continue to repeat the same mistakes over and over and over again. And here in Oregon, we have, as a required part of the curriculum, students have to learn about genocide. And so what is it if we just teach about genocide as this past tense thing, and completely are silent and ignore the current genocide that is ongoing in Gaza right now?
How do you respond to those who claim that the topic of Palestine is too controversial for the classroom?
Well, you know, education is supposed to be about things that matter. And so, of course, we're going to be dealing with things that are controversial. And so so we have to plunge in and equip kids to understand, you know, why it's controversial. And we have to go deep. You know, we have to start way back with where this all started. We have to go back and what the book does is we go back to the beginning of the Zionist movement, and to look at that period when the Zionist movement is partnering with the British Empire and is beginning to fashion an imagination to throw Palestinians out of their country. And so it's always been controversial. It was controversial to the Palestinians when they began learning of the Zionist mission in Palestine to create a Jewish state and to remove Palestinians. So this has been controversial, from the get-go. And so we're going to equip kids to understand the roots of this controversy.
Right. And also, we want students to have the tools to engage with controversial material. They're going to encounter things that are controversial their entire lives. You don't want them to just walk around agreeing with everybody all the time. And so it's important for students to learn how to take in information that is new to them, to challenge things that they thought they knew, to have conversations with people who have a really different view. That's my baby. than they might. So I think that this idea that we can't teach controversial things in school just is a really big disservice to students.
You know, Emma, I went to high school during the war in Vietnam, and, you know, the war in Vietnam was controversial then. And yet, you know, I was having to make a decision when I turned 18 as to whether or not I was going to register for the draft, whether or not I was going to accept being, you know, drafted to go and fight in Vietnam. And so to not learn about these controversial issues is to take a side. And similarly now to not engage in, you know, when the United States is paying, no country in the world has received more U.S. military aid than Israel from Israel's founding in 1948 till today. So students need to know what they think about this. and to be a moral human being in the world. And obviously we're trying to equip, we're trying to help our students live lives of morality and justice. And that takes education.
What initially drew each of you to education as a platform for activism and social justice?
The question sort of has the answer in it. The reason I was drawn to education is because I feel like it's the most powerful tool we have to change the world. I have a background in activism. I was a climate justice activist for a very long time. I would still consider myself to be one. But I witnessed in my own life, I'm the 12th of 13 children, and I'm the first one to go to college. And so I experienced in my own life how dramatically education can alter your worldview and alter kind of the kind of person that you are in the world and what you do for the world. It motivated me to become a teacher because I saw the power of education.
You know, Emma, let me talk specifically about Palestine. You know, I went to high school. My sophomore year of high school was 1966-67. And so that was the Six-Day War. I had not learned anything about Palestine, about Israel. And so I was, you know, Israel was, as far as I knew, Israel was the little guy, the underdog. And so I supported Israel during that war. And it was only later that I began learning about the history and realizing that that if I had had a decent education, I would not have landed up, you know, cheering for the war makers and the people who were stealing other people's land. And so I think that it's so essential. I mean, my own experience as not being educated led me to want to educate others and to equip people to really think deeply about what's going on in Palestine.
Bill, how do you think teachers, and Susanna, how do you think teachers should approach the issue of genocide in Gaza, especially when facing institutional silence or censorship?
I think whenever you can, to try not to do it alone. If you have other teachers at your school, if you have other teachers in your district, or even just that in your community, to just kind of go at it together, it's going to be a lot easier. But if you have to do it alone, then, you know, I think that this is kind of the moral call of our time. I'm not going to pretend that it's like it's always easy. In some instances, it is easy. I know some teachers who've taught about this and had no pushback. And I know teachers like myself and others who've faced a lot of pushback. But ultimately, you know, we have unions. We are union members. And if you're in teaching in a school like a school district like PPS, you know, we have all this language where we say that we care about social justice. And we have, so whether or not you face the pushback, you have that foundation there. And how we teach about it, I think, is how we should teach about everything, where we root ourselves in the fundamental humanity of all people. There is some people who are trying to convince us somehow that this violence is somehow justified, that killing thousands of children. You know, Bill pointed out to me the other day in a letter that Rethinking Schools sent out to the NEA that on average, since October 7th, 28 Palestinian children have been killed every day on average. That's like a classroom of children every single day. And we have some people trying to pretend that there could be any justification for that whatsoever. And I think, you know, as educators, we need to make it very clear that there is no justification for that. And so then the question is, okay, so then what do we do? And I think we want to always leave students with that question of what do we do, so that they're not just trapped in the kind of overwhelm of the situation.
Yeah, everything that Susie said, but and also, you know, we want to equip students to listen for the voices of people who are speaking about the genocide. So we want to introduce them to people who are speaking from Gaza, and they're journalists, they're young filmmakers there, they're hip hop artists there, they're doctors and nurses who have come out of Gaza, and there are a lot of voices that we need to introduce students to. Sometimes even in our effort to kind of show the grim reality of what's taking place in Gaza, we can unintentionally reduce people to victim units and to just kind of showing the horrificness of what's taking place. But there are people who are speaking out eloquently, who are writing poetry. I would introduce students to Moussa Baboutoha, the amazing poet who was here in Portland recently, and who has two pieces in the book Teaching Palestine that Susie and I are editors of. So that would be one thing, would be to center the voices of people in Gaza.
Bill, how has Rethinking Schools evolved over the years and its mission to support educators?
Golly, that's a good question. We started out, so Rethinking Schools, we're coming up on our 40th year, our 40th anniversary. And we began as just a little tabloid in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, just a group of teachers who were tired of being kind of talked at and, hit over the head by administrative fiat. And so wanted to kind of, feature articles where we're, narrating, what does critical teaching look like, and how does it look like to oppose standardized testing in schools? And so in just writing actually about Milwaukee, the Rethinking Schools editors found that there was a national voice for that, or there a national audience for that. And so we did our first book called Rethinking Columbus way back in 1991. And it was during the quincentenary, the efforts to that people wanted to celebrate the 500th anniversary of Columbus, and indigenous groups were organizing to counter that and to say, well, what about the Taino people? What about the people who were here first? And they were not discovered, they were invaded. And so we did a book, Rethinking Columbus, and found that there was just tremendous hunger. We sold 1,000 copies a day of this for the first 3 months it was out, 90,000 in 3 months, and ended up selling now over like 300,000 copies. And so that we just realized that there were that there was a hunger for among educators to have more critical resources on what it looked like to be a teacher.
And Bill, Suzanne, tell me about Teaching Palestine.
Well, last summer, a group of us got together and compiled a collection of poetry, articles, essays, beautiful visuals, and lesson plans for educators who want to correct for this curricular silence that we see, where Palestinians are just constantly left out of the curriculum. So Teaching Palestine seeks to, like Bill was saying, center the voices of Palestinians, center the experience of Palestinians, center the humanity of Palestinians. And it's a resource that we hope will be used not just by educators, but also by activists who want to bring kind of a pedagogical foundation to their work, and then for educators who want to bring in these stories from Palestinians.
The book has a lot of teaching stories and handouts for role plays and activities that teachers, and as Susie mentions, as activists who are wanting to do educationals for their members. And really what we wanted was to kind of break the silence. We wanted to say, look, this here, we need to be teaching about this. And we're not trying to create the curriculum, but we're trying to offer curricular resources so that you can begin this work. And let's, you know, let's kind of, let's hold hands around the country and let's see ourselves as joined together in this mission to figure out how during this really desperate time we can make a difference.
Thanks. And what age group is this book meant for?
Well, you know, there are articles in the book on talking with young children about Gaza and Palestine. And so it's kind of a K-12, but a K-adult book, I guess. There are resources in it for folks at different ages. You know, the people who put it together are high school teachers. And so we lean high school in the book. But again, as Susie mentioned, this is material that if you're part of a Jewish Voice for Peace, if you're part of an If Not Now, if you're part of you know, Rabbis for Ceasefire or any community group, that this would be good to pick up and use as a resource.
And is this currently being used in any school systems here in Portland?
Well, it's not adopted by any schools, no, but there are educators here in Portland who are using it. But I also think, my baby's here. This is the baby. He's talking a little bit. He's excited mm-hmm. about the book. But he wants to remind everyone that I think anybody could learn a lot from this book. And we were selling books at an event a few weeks ago, and somebody said, I'm going to buy one for my child's teacher. And I thought, oh, what a great idea. So that's another way that it can be used as well.
One woman at the event, this was the, Emma, this was the concert for Gaza. And one woman came by and she said, well, I'm not a teacher, but what's the nearest school to where I live? And so we told her, and she bought a copy of the book to take by to the school to give to the principal and say that, you know, the teachers there should be using it. So, yeah, we hope everybody will pick it up and kind of help get the word out to other educators.
What gives you hope in the current education landscape? Just kind of taking a big picture view.
I think, you know, obviously that's a difficult question right now because we are faced with so much fear, and we've got Trump in office who's saying he wants to defund, you know, any school that teaches about anything that has to do with social justice. And then even our schools that are normally oriented towards social justice are usually still pretty harsh about Palestine. But that being said, there are so many more people teaching about Palestine and talking about Palestine now than there have ever, ever, ever been in the past. It's like night and day. And we are not, I think, going to know the effects of that for years or even decades to come. And I think that the kind of ripples or the seeds that we're sowing right now in our classrooms are going to have like blooms and effects kind of beyond our wildest imaginations. And that's what I hold on to for hope.
You know, there's a yes to everything that Susie said. And just recently, the National Education Association held its representative assembly in Portland. 7,000 delegates. It's a huge, huge decision-making body from educators all around the country. And for the first time ever, the NEA representatives voted to break ties with the Anti-Defamation League. The Anti-Defamation League has gone after teachers who have taught about Palestine. It's doxed teachers. It has put forward a definition of anti-Semitism that includes anti-Zionism, which has put educators at risk everywhere. And so for the largest teachers, well, it's the largest union in the United States. And so for the largest union, the largest teachers union, to make this decision is just incredible. Now, the decision was overturned by the small executive board of the union. And so, you know, there's still a conversation and a struggle to be had. But the fact that 7,000 delegates would take a stand around this shows, as Susie was saying, that there has been real, real movement.
Right. And I also think that's so true, Bill. And I also think that hope isn't something you just have. Like, hope is something that you make, right? They say, like, hope is a discipline. It's this idea that, you know, we don't actually know the future. If we want to sit here and just add up all of the lines of everything that's gone wrong and we kind of try to logically think about the future, there's a lot to despair about. But the reality is that the future is unpredictable and history is full of really surprising things happening all the time. And so kind of in that unpredictability or in that not knowing about what the future is, there's room for each one of us to act. And that action, that, you know, whether it's saying, yeah, I am going to stand up and teach about Palestine, I'm going to talk to my neighbor, I'm going to attend the protest, I'm whatever it is, that action is what's going to give you hope. It's what's going to create the hope.
Oh, I was just saying that I was in apartheid South Africa during the darkest days. It was a state of emergency in 1986. And, you know, people were being disappeared. And it was just, there was tremendous repression. And within 10 years, Nelson Mandela was president in South Africa. Nobody would have predicted that. So, you know, we just don't know the future, as Susie said. And so, you know, we act with the confidence that really, you know, good things can happen, and that we create our own hope by acting with the presumption that our actions make a difference.
My final question for you, Bill and Susanna, is what would a truly just, inclusive, and liberatory curriculum look like when it comes to Palestine? And what steps can we take to get there?
Well, that's a tough question. I think the question presumes that we have a process to get there. And so I think that what we need to do and what we need to press our school districts to do is to sponsor gatherings of teachers who are sharing the way in which they're teaching about Palestine. They're sharing their students' experiences. They're asking, you know, what do we see happening in our own classrooms to make a difference? And the school districts need to support that kind of curiosity, that kind of pedagogical activism, and they're not. Instead, as we see what's happening, is that they're really trying to suppress discussion of Palestine and really treat Palestine as if it's a dirty word. And I think that that's where we need to begin. We need to crack open that silencing. We need to crack open that repression and insist that teachers are intellectuals, and we need to do this work in partnership with each other and also with all the organizations who have such wisdom about what ought to be taught about Palestine.
Yeah.
Thank you. Go ahead, Suzanne.
I was going to say, absolutely. Like, what I would like to see is a situation in Portland public schools, for instance, where Palestinian lives are treated with the same kind of, at least, at least the same lip service that Black lives are treated with. We say we care about social justice. We say we care about our marginalized students. And then when it comes to Palestinians, all of that goes out the window. So I would like that same, you know, at least our goals to include Palestinian life and Palestinian students and not have this sort of exception when it comes to Palestinians and when it comes to Arabs.
Thank you. We've been talking today with Bill Bigelow and Susanna Kasouf of the Zen Education Project about their new teaching resource, Teaching Palestine. Bill, Susanna, how can people get in touch with you? How can they find out about the book?
The book, again, is they can find it at rethinkingschools.org. It's Teaching Palestine. I'm happy to be reached at bill@rethinkingschools.org.
And you can find me at my work email, skasouf, skassouf, as in flower, @pps.net.
Bill, Susanna, it's really been a pleasure talking with you today. Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks, you, Emma.
Hey, what's up, everyone? It's Greg McVicar, creator of Undercurrents, and this is KBOO 90.7 Portland.
KBOO's fall membership drive is just around the corner. Help us kick off our